And the European Parliament has voted for plans to make the EU's building sector climate neutral by 2050. It's hoped all new buildings will have zero emissions from 2028. Well, joining me now is Ciarán Cuff, Green Party MEP. Good morning, Ciarán.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for joining us. You might just tell us a little bit about this, what it actually means, the fact that this was brought into play and discussed yesterday.
Yeah, well, this is an important milestone on a new law that I've been working on for the last year as the rapporteur or as the chief negotiator on. It's a bit of a tedious process, the making of laws at a European level when you're working with 27 countries. But I've been shepherding this new law through. And in essence, the law is saying, look, we have to upgrade our buildings. Why? Because they use 40% of the energy in Europe, over a third of the greenhouse gas emissions. So what we want to do is make sure that new buildings are close to zero emissions. So we call them zero emission buildings. And then with all of the other buildings that are out there, we want to renovate them. We want to upgrade them. And we want the European Union to help us with this, with the funds that it can make available. So it's an ambitious task. It obviously can't be done overnight. It's a 20 or a 30 year project. But if we do it right, we'll reduce the energy costs for tenants and owners, we'll create jobs, and we'll lower our greenhouse gas emissions. So it's an important step forward. When it comes down then to the technologies, I mean, how do you actually build a building that uses almost no energy? Well, first of all, insulation is hugely important, so decent insulation. But then solar panels that produce electricity, that is part of what we're doing. And then the move to heat pumps. And in fact, in Ireland, over 70% of new buildings have heat pumps rather than boilers these days. Mm. So it's really copper fastening what's already happening, but making sure that we try and accelerate this in order to save people money, in order to save the planet, and in order to cut back on our use of fossil fuels, a lot of which are coming from places like Russia.
Okay, could you expand a little bit maybe on, if we fast forward and imagine we're in the year 2028 or 2029 and building companies are going out to build new houses, what would they look like and what kind of infrastructure would be in place? You touched on some of it there, but if you were to build a brand new house now, how would you do so?
Well, as I've spelled out there, yeah, it's all the technologies that I've spoken about there, but also looking towards Europe with things like district heating systems, where hot water or steam goes in a pipe around a town, and you can tap into that to get the heat that you need for your home and for your hot water in the summer or winter. That's very common around Europe, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it. In Ireland, you might have seen a story there about a data centre out in Talla, a Google data centre, where the waste heat is being used to heat the homes nearby. We'll see a lot more of that. We'll see a lot more PV panels, the solar panels on the roofs. And if we do it right, we'll be using the excess power to charge up the electric vehicles that we're seeing more and more of on the roads. I mean, I have a pal in Dublin, and he has built himself a new house. It's built to a what we call a passive house standard, so very little heating needed, very little energy needed. But the panels on the roof actually charge up his car, and he can get 15,000 kilometres a year from the panels on the roof. So we'll see a lot more of these kind of win-win situations around Ireland. I think we'll see a lot more people working in the construction industry. We need to double our renovation rate, so we'll see more decent jobs in construction, and particularly in not only building the new homes that we so desperately need in Ireland, but in retrofitting the ones that we have. And this will be repeated all around Europe. I mean, this new law, it'll apply in Finland, it'll apply in Italy, it'll apply in Ireland. So it's a big deal to get through.
It is, and it's much needed, Ciarán, because there's a story emerging today from Friends of the Earth, and they say the government's climate and energy poverty plans are failing to address high energy prices and household reliance on fossil fuels. The report that they've brought out says that inadequate income, high energy costs and inefficient housing are the main reasons people are struggling to heat their homes. They also say that tenants renting from private landlords are most at risk of energy poverty, according to the report. So there is a need for government to kind of step up here, is there not?
Oh, there absolutely is. And the Friends of the Earth report resonates with the draft law that we put through the European Parliament yesterday that I was in charge of, because we've said we need social safeguards. And by that, I mean we need to direct the funding particularly towards tenants who are often at the mercy of a landlord who has no interest in improving the insulation or the energy performance of the building, because the tenant is picking up the tab on the electricity or the heating costs. So this law will put pressure on those who own buildings to improve them. Of course, if people can't afford it, there will be help available, and we have all kinds of European funding. We have what we call the Recovery and Resilience Funds, which is the post-COVID money. That's important for Ireland, but it's really important in countries like Italy and Spain that were so dramatically impacted by COVID. Mm-hmm. But then there's structural funds, there's the InvestEU funds. So there's a lot of money available, but it won't all be public money. Obviously, householders will be under pressure to improve their homes. But look, we can't just sort of wait for good intentions to tackle the climate crisis. We need laws that put pressure on all of us to reduce the emissions. And if people can't afford it, there needs to be help from governments, help from local authorities, and we need to put the right mechanism in place to make that happen.
Okay, also just going back to this Friends of the Earth report, it says a much more ambitious target should be set for the retrofitting of social housing, and a minimum standard of B2 should be achieved in all social housing by 2030. So when we talk about, you know, plans going forward and looking at what you're hoping to achieve by 2028 and 2050 with new bills, what about retrofitting old houses to ensure that they don't get left behind?
Oh, it's hugely important. And I wrote a report last year on what we call the renovation wave. And in a nutshell, the deep renovation rate in Europe is about 1% a year. We want to get that up to 2% or 3%. And this would mean aligning us with the what we call the Paris Agreement, the big climate change agreement that was signed in Paris 8 years ago. So we need to boost that. We need to improve the skills of construction workers. And thankfully, the Irish government is putting in place 6 centres of excellence to boost construction skills. We need to put in place the finance. But already the European Investment Bank is putting a lot of money into Ireland to improve social housing. I think 150 million has gone into the greater Dublin area on this. And I can see it making a difference. Around the corner from where I live in Stonybatter, we have senior citizens, two-story housing, terraced housing. And they've been brought from, an F energy rating up to an A. And you can see it in the comfort and quality of the new accommodation. You can see it in the smiles from the people living there. Mm. It makes a real difference in their lives. And okay, I agree with Friends of the Earth. We need to start with social housing, with local authority housing and voluntary housing. And I'd love to set a target for a B energy rating this decade for social housing and then move on to the rest of the building stock.
And just to finish up then, Ciarán, one final point. This plan that has been voted for by the European Parliament, you've said yourself and some commentators have said it is ambitious. It's very ambitious. We then have the Friends of the Earth on the other side of the coin saying that the government's climate and energy poverty plans in this country at the moment lack ambition. So where do we find that balance and meet in the middle between a very, very ambitious plan in European Parliament to the Irish government not being ambitious enough, reportedly?
Well, the wonderful thing about the laws that we make in Brussels and Strasbourg is that there is a requirement for each country to implement them through these directives or regulations. So once this law gets through the final hurdle, which is this process of trialogues where the Commission, the Parliament and the Council sit down, we'll then have a requirement on each country to take action. So that'll put pressure on the Irish government to do more on this. And in fairness, I think Eamon Ryan and his colleagues in government are doing quite a bit, but we need to increase our efforts. And this new law, it'll put in place targets for 2027, 2030, and all the way up to the end of the 2030s. And I think what it'll mean is just a big push to move the retrofitting agenda and the new build zero emission buildings forward. And that aligns quite well with the climate plans that have been adopted by the Irish government. And look, the time for action is now. We can talk and we can plan, we can strategize, but we actually now need to move the money in to provide the skills, to provide the workers, and that'll be the real challenge in the next few years.
Okay, on that note, Green Party MEP Ciarán Cuff, thanks for your time this morning. The European Parliament voting for plans to make the EU's building sector climate neutral by 2050, with all new buildings hoped to have zero emissions by 2028. Thanks again for joining us, Ciarán. Coming up after the break, we have local issues again in the Naas area. Crime Time with Kildare Gardaí. That's nice piece of music from Paul Simon, and also still to come before 11 o'clock, Dara Fitzpatrick, bookmaker, will mark your card on day two of the Cheltenham Racing Festival.
Kildare Today with Owen Beatty.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, we're going back to the Naas Municipal District, and Fianna Fáil Councillor Carmel Kelly joins us on the line now. Good morning to you, Carmel.
Tiagat,
Cé Wiltu. Tom August Tufain.
Gahanawa.
Good stuff, good stuff. Of course, Shocton na Gael, we're trying to get the odd bit of Irish in there whenever we can. Carmel, before... Cúpla focal indeed. Before we get to some of the issues that you've been raising with the council, I noticed there's a decrease in the number of caravans out on the bypass there in Sallins.
Oh, thankfully, yes. All of the caravans that had that were illegally camped there for the last couple of weeks on the Link Road all moved off on Sunday afternoon. So very relieved of that. But then they knew that the legal process had begun and that they were probably going to be served legal documents on Monday morning. So that's how it works.
Right, okay, so they have gone.
They have gone. If I may, and I probably not what you wanted to talk about this morning, I had a lot of calls. You see, there is a process. It does take a couple of weeks, and I know it can be very frustrating for people, but there is a process that usually that has to be gone through.
Mm.
And it happens every time. And can I just say to the people of Sallins and to the people of Naas who use that road, we will be looking at putting more permanent solution in place to ensure that this is not going to be an annual event, because it seems to have been since the Link Road and the bypass open. But I have asked for a meeting with roads, with housing, with our own manager next week, so that we can come up with a solution.
All right, two things, Carmel. This is going to cost thousands to clean up.
Yes.
That's the first point. Second point, yes. Surely can we just put up some concrete bollards there where they got in the last time and make sure that they won't come back there?
Well, we can do that, certainly. And if you were out there yesterday, you'd see some of those big, huge concrete blocks are already in place.
Mm.
But I just preface that by saying one of the spots that they went into was the attenuation pond. Now, that's a health and safety issue straight off the bat. And the other thing is, there are attenuation ponds at the side of every bypass. And I think this is the first time that caravans went in along there. And there needs to be access. Like, that's an ongoing issue. It's there for a reason. So there needs to be access for maintenance. So we have to find some way of being able to act that the council officials have to access that. Then the bollards, then one of the other sites that they camped on is a private site.
Yeah.
And it's zoned town centres, so it will be built on at some stage. But in the meantime, again, can we put bollards up on that? That would be up to the owner. And also the first spot that they were on were the community lands, the amenity lands. So they will be working on those in the next couple of months, in the next couple of years. Again, putting up bollards is going to not only prevent them from accessing it, but also prevent council staff.
Okay.
So there has to be some way, a happy, you know, I don't know. That's why we're meeting next week, to come up with some solution.
Right.
Because obviously gates and locks do not work.
Did you get a breakdown on maintenance costs associated with the Sallins Road cycle scheme? Bill Clear mentioned this a little bit earlier as well, the cleaning of the bollards, the broken bollards there, the road sweeping, etc.
Yeah, I did. I got a breakdown. And look, I prefaced this yesterday by saying that I fully support this traffic calming project. You know, I marched along with thousands in Sallins and the road safety group to ensure that this project would happen. So, but we've just become broken bollard city from what I could see. And I was concerned that the maintenance and, again, the upkeep of it. And so far, I think over €4,000, I was told yesterday, has been spent on maintenance. And that's going to be an ongoing issue. The cleaning inside, there's a specialist road sweeper that Kildare County Council have to hire, a smaller one, because the ordinary size one won't fit in there. And then the cost to buy bollards, I think they spent $2,600 on buying bollards. And I was saying, guys, we don't need that many bollards. I've already presented to the roads crew some alternatives, especially in the middle of the village, to putting in medians as opposed to all the bollards. But also the colour of the bollards is a big issue. Mm. Black bollards does not work in Ireland in the winter because they're black. They have white reflective stripes. But the muck on the bollards after a couple of weeks, you can't see them, so no wonder they've been hit.
Right. The Kildare Lighting Infrastructure Priority Schedule, or CLIPS as it's known for the municipal district there, what did you get told on that?
I got told, well, I suppose the reason behind the fact that I knew that I had put in for a couple of extra lights in Sallins, and I knew others had been put in Naas, and some of them were there since 2018 and they hadn't been worked on, so I wanted to know why. And of course, funding, the elephant in the room, lack of funding. The budget is all gone on, like, this is public lighting, but the budget has been used to upgrade the lighting to, you know, to the LEDs, and I can understand that, but also at the cost of energy has escalated, so there's no budget. And unfortunately, that's the bottom line. So I've got to go back. I'm going to talk to the executive about there must be another way of finding funding, because the reason these extra lights I have down for Ostertown Cottages there, White City, there's a black spot there, black spot in Aylmer Park. I mean, the requests are there. They're reasonable requests. These are black spots and we need them. But we're going to have to go back to them and find where we're going to source alternative funding.
Okay, two final points, Carmel, and briefly on these, if you would. The Greenway Aylmer Bridge to Sallins, what update did you get there? And also the Sallins Playground, when is that going to be scheduled for maintenance?
Great news on the Greenway. It's progressing as per, and it's going to be a fabulous facility. And we were given, and if you would give it out afterwards, if anybody wants to see how it's progressing, there is, if you want to go to their County Council's website and go on to Aylmer Bridge Sallins, and if you give out that, people will be able to see how it is progressing. I had some queries about when we get into the village and the new pedestrian bridge is in place. How do we get people safely across the road? We're going to need a pedestrian crossing there on the Sherlockstown Road. Also, I have concerns about extra lighting. Again, it's quite dark along there, as I discovered during COVID when everything was shut down. It was quite dark along the canal, so we're going to have a look at that. So they've agreed to have a look at all of those areas for me, and I'm very grateful. But I would ask people to go and have a look, because it's going to be a wonderful facility when it opens. With regard to the maintenance of the playground in Sallins, I got a very detailed report. It is done on an annual basis, and it is checked every weekend. But there were some extras that I had noted in the last couple of weeks. The matting is beginning to come through on the grass and it's quite uneven. So the Parks Department are going to look at that for me. But it is maintained every year and there is a health and safety audit done on it every year.
Okay, Fianna Fáil councillor on the Naas Municipal District, Carmel Kelly, thanks for that update, Carmel, and good morning. Now, a lot of messages coming in to us, which we'll catch up on now. Kay says, hello, Owen, I see there's a group of caravans over in the Curra now. Why can't they be fined for the mess that they leave behind? That's a question that a lot of people would like the answer to. Kay, another one here from Marion says that the council were quick at putting up those bollards for cycling lanes along the road in Sallins. Sallins is broken bollard city, as Carmel says. The council were not so fast at preventing halting sites for the travelling community there in the area. Jay has been in touch to say there was a no-show of the bus in Suncroft this morning. My daughter missed college again. This TFI link is a joke. My daughter and a mother with her kids left completely stranded on the side of the road. What bus service is that, Jay? What bus number is it? For example, is it the 139? Is it the 120? You might let me know. I know it's not those buses, but just for example, what number is it? Get it back in touch with me. Another one in here with a birthday request. Can we wish Patricia Brennan in Churchview in Suncroft a very happy birthday? That comes in from Andy. Also another one, could you please give a shout out to my grandson Aaron Jessup, who's getting his confirmation today. We're all super proud of him. Lots of love from Nanny Helen, Mammy and all the family. Teresa was also in touch on the text to say Owen and Cuiva, happy St. Patrick's. Wishing ye both a great day. Love the show as always. And Jay has been back in touch with us to say that the bus was the 126, the blue and yellow bus that didn't show up in Suncroft this morning. So we'll try and get more information for you on that. And finally for now, could you please play a special happy birthday request for our granddaughter Farah, who's 11 years of age. She's from Rathangan and that comes in from Granny and Grandad Conlon. We got an email in from Tom Kelly in Newbridge and it says, I'm just wondering, do litter wardens actually exist these days? What do they look like? What's their uniform colour, etc.? I ask this because when I'm out walking, it just annoys the hell out of me to see junk thrown everywhere. Bus stops, for example, you will find cigarette butts, packets, coffee cups, all types of food takeaway cartons lying around and a bin normally situated 1 metre from the bus stop. Is it taught in schools now? The town is absolutely full of rubbish and nobody seems to do anything about the culprits. This is Newbridge, I'm assuming that you're talking about, Tom, because that's where you're living. Have you ever seen or heard of anyone being fined for littering offences? I certainly haven't, says Tom. Dreadful to witness children throwing paper on footpaths while their parents are with them. And he says it's the end of his rant, but if you let him know, are litter wardens now extinct or do they really exist? My understanding is that they do still exist, but we'll throw it out to the KFM listeners. Have you ever received a fine for littering? When was the last time you saw the litter warden in effect? Let us know anyway, 0833 97 97 97. That's the email that's come in to us from Tom Kelly in Newbridge.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Naas. We keep it secure and safe 24 hours a day. 045 408 300.
All right, just going back to the issue there before the break regarding Tom Kelly's email. We've checked that up and litter wardens do still exist here in Kildare and are still in effect in the county. But I take the point that you're making regarding the amount of litter that's around the area and you're saying in Newbridge. But litter wardens are still in operation here in Kildare. Time for Crime Time and joining me now is John Dunn, Sergeant John Dunn at Newbridge Garda Station. Good morning, John.
Good morning, how are we keeping?
We're going to a number of issues around the county, starting off actually in Newbridge, and people will have heard this on our news over the last week regarding the serious assault at in the town there, which ultimately culminated in a man losing his life.
Yeah, Gardaí and Newbridge are currently investigating a serious assault that occurred in the Pierstown area of Newbridge. A man in his 40s later died at Naas General Hospital on Friday the 10th of March. The time frame that we're looking at here is the 7th of March, Tuesday the 7th of March at 10 a.m. to Wednesday the 8th of March, approximately 4 p.m. in Pierstown. One arrest was made in regards to this investigation, and he was released pending preparation of a file to the DPP. An incident room has been established at Newbridge Garda Station, and an investigation is continuing under direction of a senior investigation officer in Newbridge. And Gardaí Newbridge would like to ask the public for any witnesses who may be able to assist them with the investigation to contact Newbridge Garda Station on 045 440180, the Garda confidential line, or any Garda station.
All
and
right.
Again, just the time frame on that is Tuesday the 7th of March, last Tuesday at 10 a.m. to the Wednesday morning, afternoon to around 4 p.m. in Pearson.
Okay, you're also investigating an assault at Naas, or in Naas there, and when did this happen, John?
That was Sunday the 12th of March at approximately 3:40 a.m. So it would have been the Saturday night going into the Sunday morning, and it occurred around Market Square, Naas. Gardaí at Naas are investigating this. An injured male was at a taxi rank with a friend at Market Square, Naas. It is the taxi rank across the road from Elvery Sports in Naas. There, it's a well-known busy taxi rank in Naas. The injured male was assaulted by a group of three males, and he sustained a broken ankle following the assault. Gardaí at Naas are asking the public if they noticed any altercation taking place around this taxi rank around 3:40 a.m. There was also a group of girls nearby this altercation, so we'd be looking for to see any of them could come forward to assist Gardaí. The three suspects, they walked towards South Main Street, sort of up the town towards the Garda station. Gardaí would ask any vehicles up around the area around Market Square around that time, 3:40 a.m., whether they had that cam footage or any of the taxis that might have been working on that night to contact Naas Garda station.
All right, and finally then, John, there was a theft again in the Naas area. When did this happen?
This was on Saturday the 11th of March at 1:30 a.m. So it was again the Friday, like going into the Saturday morning. It's between 1:30 a.m. and 10 past 10 in the morning. The owner of a vehicle parked up the car in the Naas shopping mall, North Main Street, Naas, at approximately 1:30 a.m. And the car park is located between St. David's Church and Eddie Rockets. Some locals will know that area. The vehicle was a black Volkswagen Polo hatchback. The owner returned to the vehicle later in the morning and observed that the back rear window had been smashed and a handbag was taken from behind the driver's seat. Gardaí are looking for any witnesses that may have seen any suspicious persons in the car park between 1:30 a.m. and 10 past 10 the following morning when the owner returned. So anyone that was going in and out of that little bit of the car park, we would ask them to contact Naas Garda station if they've seen anything suspicious.
Okay, with a look at those crimes, that is Sergeant John Dunn from Newbridge Garda Station. Thanks indeed, John, and anyone with information, take it to the Garda stations mentioned there, Newbridge or Naas, or indeed your local Garda station.
Crime Watch on KFM.
With Manguard Plus, Ladytown Business Park, Naas, PSA licensed, 045 408 300 or manguardplus.ie.
Okay, a couple more of the messages that are coming in to us. Councillor Brendan Wise says, we have a number of community wardens that we often work with on littering or illegal dumping. They come out and examine cases for evidence, and if we do find evidence, then they issue a fine. Unfortunately, the fine is only €150, which is too low in Brendan's opinion, but the wardens do exist and do issue the fines if possible. People can report littering or illegal dumping, says Brendan, using the Kildare County Council free phone litter hotline, which is 1800 243 243. That's 1800 243 243. And finally for now, could you please wish all the children in St. Oliver Plunkett National School in Killinagh all the best today for their confirmation, especially Joey O'Sullivan, that comes in from all the family and to KFM. Hope you all have a great St. Patrick's Day. Well, thanks for that message, and the best of luck to Joey O'Sullivan and all the students in St. Oliver Plunkett National School in Killinagh.
KFM's Cheltenham Week Morning Update with bookmaker Dara Fitzpatrick.
Yes, Dara joins us in studio again. Good morning, Dara.
Morning, Owen. How are you this morning?
Good. Not a bad day you had yesterday, but a bone to pick with you. You got the first race wrong, but you got the next you got the next three races right, which was good. So fair play to you. A lot to live up to.
It's very hard to keep it right all the time. Look, we'll try. We'll keep going. It's Cheltenham. Very hard to pick the winners, but we'll try our best today again. Have a few horses that I fancy really strongly today.
Right, let's start off with the first race then, which is at 1:30, the Ballymore Novices Hurdle. It's a Grade 1. Who are we looking at here? Willie Mullins maybe in Paul Townend?
Yeah, well, it's very hard to get away from him. Imperial de Pass. Like, I was at a few Cheltenham preview nights over the last couple of weeks, and everywhere you went, you picked up this horse. This horse is around a 3-1, 7-2 shot a week ago. It's going to start out about a 7-4 shot. So I'm actually looking for a bit of value in the race against it. A horse I like, and Barry Connell, if you listen to what he was saying before the race and yesterday, he talked his horses up yesterday, Marine National, everywhere. And he's talking this lad up as well, good land each way. I can't get this fella out of the place at around a 5 or 6-1 shot. And I noticed this morning, all the money, geez, the English train runners are going to have some winner somewhere in Cheltenham. We beat them 5-2 yesterday.
Yeah.
Hermes Allen, the winner of the Challow the last time, trained by Paul Nickens and written by Hardy Cobden. So I'm going to maybe oppose the favourite just a little bit here, and I'm going to impose him with two horses, the 4-horse good land each way, and the 5-horse Hermes Allen.
Okay, the second race then is at 2:10, and this is the Brown Advisory Novices Chase. Who are we looking at here?
Yeah, this is going to turn into a slog. It's a 3 mile over fences, and it's very hard to get away from Jerry Kalam, the Gordon Elliott trained and Jordan Gainford ridden, owned by Robacore horse. This won a Group 1 last time in Sandown, won it very well, like looked a couple of times throughout the race that it was going to be beat, and it stayed on well at the finish. A horse I like, but it's very little experience in the race, and there's lots of money for it this morning, and it's the 7-horse Sir Gerhard. This was bigger prices overnight and is now back into about a 7-2 shot. Sir Gerhard for Willie Mullins and Paul Townlands. And the only thing I'd say about Jerry Kalam over Jerry Kalam is Sir Gerhard has proven form around Cheltenham. It won the bumper there when in lockdown when the place was closed, actually ridden by Rachel Blackmore that day, and it won a novice hurdle there. So it's two wins around Cheltenham. The only thing again negative for him is that he's only won once over fences, and that was in Gorn a couple of weeks ago. So Jerry Kalam is the likely winner, but a horse I like each way in the race is Sir Gerhard, trained by Willie Hollins and Chiefly Park. And another one I'd like each way is the Real Whacker. Very good race, very hard to pick the winner of it.
Okay, the next one is the Coral Cup Handicap Hurdle. This is a premier handicap, and this is a tough one as well, Darragh.
I take a deep breath here when I look at this race. I'm after going up and down this race so many times over the last 2 days, and I can't zone in on one that I really, really, really fancy. A couple of horses, HMSC horses, proven, trained by Paul Nolan down in Wexford. And he's a man that likes to party, the trainer, and I'd love to see him winning for that reason. On and HMS Seahorse won last time out, has proven form around the track, run well in a race here last year, and it's ridden by Sean O'Keefe. So it's a very tentative selection here, the 12 horse HMS Seahorse. And another horse I like in the race is the 17 horse Benson, an English trained winner, and they'll be scarce on the ground this week. So I'm going to tentatively put up two against the field. I'm going to put up the 12 horse HMS Seahorse and the 17 horse Benson, but it's a minefield here. Like, I've circled around loads of horses, the top horse, the one horse Fildor, ridden by Ben Harvey, an up and coming claimer, claims £5 here today. That's a real chance. Run for Oscar Charles Burns. Like, there's loads of them. Beacon Edge, trained by Noel Mead, ridden by Michael O'Sullivan, the in-form jockey. But I'm going to slightly side with the 12 horse and the 17 horse, HMSC horse and Benson.
Okay, then we move on to the feature at 3:30, the Queen Mother Champion Chase and Energumen for Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. Can you look?
Always been. It's a lickety click race to go real fast here over the fences over 2 miles. The soft ground will bring them back a little bit. So It's whichever horse doesn't make the mistake, to be honest with you. Ergamine rang at Cheltenham last time out. He was a very, very easy winner last year. He beat Shishkin here. He romped home. I think he won it by about 10 or 12 lengths, although Shishkin didn't run well in that race. He actually pulled up. But he'd one run there in Cheltenham a couple of months ago, ran really bad. And for that reason, I'm going to go with the 9-year-old here, Edward Stone, to beat him. But no matter where you go, one fella will fancy Ergamine, the other fella will fancy Edward Stone. So take your choice. I think in fairness, one of them will win. And if you'd ask me to back a horse each way in the race, it's the locally owned Captain Guinness, owned by a good old Alan man, Declan Landy. He has the fencing company, and it'd be nice to see that horse run into a place for Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore. And just what a day they had yesterday.
I was going to bring that up. What about Honeysuckle? Where did she come from?
What about Honeysuckle yesterday? Like, it just shows you that the Bromheads needed Honeysuckle.
Yeah.
Rachel needed Honeysuckle. The whole of Cheltenham, whether you backed Honeysuckle or whether you didn't back Honeysuckle, whether you were on the side that it was going to win or it was going to lose,
yeah,
it made no difference when she went past the line. The whole of Cheltenham was... It was unbelievable. It's a great story for racing. And racing always throws up these type of stories all the time.
Yeah.
There's something happened somewhere. And she's now gone to stud. She'll probably be put in foal in the next couple of months.
Yeah.
And her foal will be born next year. But it's absolutely a brilliant ending, a fairy tale story. And the year that the Bromheads are after having burying their son earlier in the year, it's heart-wrenching.
Absolutely, and it was great even for the neutral, even if you didn't have a bet on at the race yesterday, just to see Honeysuckle and the delight in the faces of Rachel Blackmore and Henry de Bromhead.
Whatever appeal Rachel Blackmore has in racing, it's just she ticks a lot of boxes that others don't. Maybe, I don't know, but like, she's just such a nice person, and she spoke so well after the race. Like, she's a really down-to-earth person.
She did indeed. The next race then is the 4:10. It's the Glenfarclas Chase. Delta Work, kind of short favourite here.
Yeah, last year's winner, Delta Work. I think Gordon Elliott actually holds the aces here. Delta Work and Galvin. I think there's a lot of runners in the race. There's 16 runners in the race. But I think it's going to come down between these two. In the last race, if you can remember, Delta Work and Tiger Roll came to the last race, and it was a ding-dong battle from the last home. And a lot of people were saying, why didn't they let the fairy tale story happened with Tiger Roll winning at Cheltenham yesterday, but Delta Work got up and done him on the line. And Delta Work is the favourite here. Davy Russell rode Delta Work last year, and now he rides Galvin this year. I don't know, it's ding dong, it's nip and tuck. I'd probably side a little bit with Galvin, but very hard to make a call in the race. And I went up and down this a couple of times. Gin on Lime has proven form around Cheltenham, but she hasn't proven around the cross country course in Cheltenham. Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore around a 14 to 1 shot. I think this horse could hit the crossbar. So it's Delta Work or Galvin with each way horse in the race, the 15 horse Gin on Lime.
Gin on Lime. All right. The 4:50 then is the Johnny Henderson Grand Annual Challenge Cup Handicap Chase. I see a horse in here that, if memory serves me right, it's a horse that you always mention, you always like. Andy Dufresne, Mark Walsh, and Gordon Elliott. Yeah.
It's top weight in the handicap here, and I have a big circle around him again. And he's not top weight in the handicap for no reason at all. He has the form in the book. He doesn't have too many ones after himself, but the times that he goes for the times that they go for this horse is the times he comes home and times that he wins. He's a plot horse. He's been set up for the race. I know Gordon Daly Camp secretly fancy him. So the one horse, Andy Dufresne, is a definite chance here in this race. I like a couple of other horses in the race. You have to tip up a few horses in this race because it's such a wide open contest. I like Third Time Lucky, the 4 horse trained by the Skeltons. I think they'll have a winner somewhere in the festival. And I also like, down at the very bottom, the 16 horse. A horse that won well in Limerick before Christmas and came out then at the Dublin Racing Festival and was travelling really well at the second or third last, and hit the second or third last and went out from there home. So Andy Dufresne, Third Time Lucky and Mascada are my 3 in the race, but it don't get any easier from here on home. I'd be actually a spectator for the last 2 races here. I wouldn't be having a bet.
Right, okay. And of course the favourite on that one is number 18, Dino Blue for Willie Mullins and Luke Dempsey.
Luke Dempsey, and like, you have to mention Luke Dempsey's from Darren Turn there in Carbery. I meet him in the shop in Allenwood there all the time. He goes right work. He's a great up and coming young jockey. His father Philip trains horses there in Carbery and Darren Turn. and it would be lovely to see a local man win.
Okay, the last one, just out of time there, but the briefly on this one.
A wide open race. Willie Mullins has, I think, 10 runners in this race out of a field of 24. Of the Willie Mullins horses, I actually like an outsider here. The 6 horse, Chapeau de Sal, was beaten Fairy House before Christmas, but I was told before the race that this was their Cheltenham horse. I also like the John McConnell horse, Proven Around the Track. Won a graded race here in Cheltenham before Christmas, had been put away and it's been trained specifically for this race, and that's the 8 horse, Encanto Bruno. A minefield, so many horses have chances, and other horses it's for me. 3 against the field here, so I go for the 8 horse, Encanto Bruno, the 12 horse, It's For Me, and the, where am I looking here, I am at the 6 horse, Chapeau de Sal. Wide open contest. I'd be keeping my powder dry for tomorrow if I was to have a bet.